Name of the Father, the Son, Holy Spirit, Amen. Today is July 70th, 2013. This is a very important lecture we're going to give. I'm going to prove to you something today that it's possible to fall in and out of the church. And I'm talking about myself. I was out of the church for a while. I'm going to tell you why. Don't get shocked now, but it's true. I was denying some basic dogmas that I came to the conclusion. I've been studying for a long time before I'm telling you brothers this. But it's most important for me to tell you for two reasons. You know, many times I've told you that if I don't get this thing right, I'm going to drag all you guys out with me. So everything we've been talking about and going over for years, and that's why I pulled my stuff down for a while. I've been studying for about a year on all this stuff. And I knew things weren't 100% correct, but I'm going to explain to you what's going on here. There's a few basic dogmas I have denied. I'll give you an instance on one of them. Until recently, just this week, I abjured from them. A couple of them that I was denying. And I'll tell you how I came to the conclusion on that. But my point is, if you're denying them too, then you'd be out of the church too. So that's why we have this. The thing that you have now, when I'm going to read it, these are regarding basic dogmas. You may not be out of the church. If you believed in these things, then you didn't fall out. But if you didn't, then you're out. By your signing this thing, you're coming back into the church. What's important about it is, these are basic dogmas. They're not deeper dogmas. So that's why I'm only dealing with them this week. Next week, I'm going to deal with deeper dogmas. But these issues are complicated. That's true. But not impossible. The thing that got me, my main mortal sins are human respect. Not wanting to believe it was possible to not have popes for 700 years. Human respect, number one. What was the other thing I had on there? That's the main one, but there was others. Not just popes. Saints, as we know in the beginning. And we're not talking about just canonizations was a big thing on that. So what that got me to do is make excuses for things I knew, basically, that weren't right. Because now I'll give you an example of what hit me this week. I forget what date was about last week. I was listening to one of my sermons from the year 2007 on the root of the great apostasy, which a lot of people are downloading. It's a really good, it's got a lot of good stuff in there. But then, and this goes back to 2000. So he's saying, and you even got these rotten, wicked popes bringing in idols and statues into the Vatican, you know, and how could that happen unless they were infected by philosophy, theophilosophy and all that? I said, now I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying that they were guilty of idolatry because they didn't believe in the idols, they didn't believe in the statues, which they didn't, but they still did it, you see? I will now play the clip from my audio lecture, The Root of the Great Apostasy, ALR 6, which was recorded on November 22nd, 2007. You realize that at one point the Vatican was starting to store idols in their basement? And they said, oh, for posterity, so we can show people like what it was. They have the two-headed head of Janus, they got statues of Zeus, they got all these idols in the Vatican basement. Now, when one guy called me up in the monastery and mentioned that, I said, yeah, no, that sounds pretty strange. Why would you? God says, smash the idols. Obliterate the memory of them from the face of the earth. Now, the reason we don't say it's yet heresy, but it's sacrilege, and it still is a blasphemy, the popes didn't say, I believe in Zeus, I believe in Venus, I believe in Mars. They didn't believe in it, but they were enamored by it. They wanted to learn about it. And we're going to get into that. That's what the Renaissance movement really was all about. It was about the resurrection of paganism in Catholic society by bad popes themselves. These rotten to the core, filthy, dirty popes.
End of clip.
Now, I just condemned myself in my recent sermon because if you notice what I said in new sermon, the desecration, if anybody doesn't believe they're idolaters, he's a former heretic. Don't even walk on the same street as me. So I'm condemning myself, you see. Now, what was going on back then? First of all, here's what you're thinking. If this guy's guilty for that, then we don't have no pope for 700 years. Now, when I finally came to the conclusion, and we seen the door, that really sort of was a shock to me. I went, no way. And then once you come out and can say, no, we had no pope for 700 years, then I begin to realize, hey, you know, you've been making excuses for these bombs and certain things relating to basic dogmas. Now, that basic dogma is that anybody who sets an idol up in his home or especially in a church, I don't care whether he believes in it or not, he's an idolater. He's even worse if he doesn't believe in it because now he's a hypocrite on top of it. That's basic. Well, I was denying that because if I didn't deny it on my last thing, you know, I finally came to the truth of it, but now I got to abjure from it because early on, I'm making excuses for them. I'm saying, well, there's a difference. There is a difference between a guy, let's say, who believes in the idol and sets it up and he worships it and he bows down. What I was saying was this. If a so-called Pope sets up an idol in a church, but he doesn't bow down to it, he doesn't kiss its foot, he doesn't burn incense to it, which is what the Lapses did. That was a sin of commission. That was bad too. He committed a sin of commission too by setting it up. They actually worshipped it, and they adored it. Well, they didn't do that. So I said, well, in their case, they didn't believe in it, so they are suspect of heresy, guilty of mortal sin, no doubt and all that, but they're not idolaters. Formally, they're not really guilty of mortal sin, but they are. They are. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what, it makes you even worse. Your actions speak louder than your what you say you believe in your heart. The fact that you put it up in there, you're guilty. Fully guilty. That's one of the big ones. That's the one I came to when I was this week, and I said, I better look at some of these other things that I've been wrestling with. Now, some of these things I originally held. I did hold them. And not until I started making excuses for these popes, so-called popes, and saints. When you make excuses for these people, you end up denying basic dogmas. One, another one you'll see on the list is there's condemning sinners and denouncing sinners. Now, you know what's amazing? We'll just stay in this one topic for a minute, though. Here's what made me think about it. If setting up an idol in a church by a so-called pope doesn't make him an idolater if he doesn't believe in it, then guess what? John Paul II is not guilty for letting the Buddha get on top of the tabernacle in Assisi. Because if you spoke to John Paul II and asked him, do you believe Buddha's God? Well, you know I don't believe it. I just let him do it because it's neat. So then he's off the hook. I started thinking about all this. I said, now, but in the beginning, I held the dogma. I held that dogma. Look at my book of evidence. In there, I said, when JP2 put the Buddha, allowed that to happen, he's an idolater. So I held the dogma, then I didn't hold the dogma, and now I hold it again. So I'm falling in, I'm falling out. What caused me to fall out? Human respect. Because JP2 and the Vatican II Church, well, okay. But going back 700 years, because that's what you're facing. If I accuse those idols in the Vatican of being truly idolatrous, then I have to admit that there's been no pope since at least 1445. And that's the thing, that's human respect, me not wanting to say that right away, me trying to figure, well, maybe they weren't completely guilty, and I'm thinking in my mind, that's human respect. I don't care how you want to toss it, 20,000 different ways. I don't care if I got to denounce the whole world of people. When they're bad, they're bad. And these guys really are. So when I look back and I said, you know, not until we started to realize that it implicates these guys back from to 1445 that I fall back into that heresy. I never held it. I never held that heresy in the beginning. Most of these things I'm going to tell you that I'm telling you about right now, I never held in the beginning. The second part is I was infected by heretical theology books. So now you got two things going on here. Heretical theology books, bad so-called papal laws, infected by saints who we thought were saints. That goes back a little further. Next week I'm going to do maybe a video on this. But I want to get this done this week to make sure you guys come back into the church if you're out of it. I already abjured from it. I'm saying it again, all these. And if you held any of these and you're out, you sign it, you're back in. Next week I'm going to talk about deeper dogmas, and I may even do a video on it. Explain the situation, unless maybe this audio will do it sufficiently, which we're going to talk about now. So what we're saying here then is, if you look at my early writings, I said, on sins of omission, anybody who doesn't condemn a sin shares equally in the guilt of the sin. Or anybody that doesn't denounce a sinner shares equally in the guilt of the sinner. Well, I changed that later on. I changed it to the opinion, it's a basic dogma that anybody who doesn't condemn a sin or denounce a sinner is guilty of a sin of omission, mortal sin of omission. I always held that one. But then I said, however, he doesn't share equally in the guilt of the sin or the sinner in certain cases. Here's the case I gave. Somebody is holding a heresy where they believe the Pope's not the supreme head of the church, and I commit a sin of omission by not condemning the sin or denouncing him as a sinner. I don't care for what reason it is. I don't do it. And I'm asked, what is that? And I said, I ain't going to tell you. I remain silent, like a Thomas More thing. Well, I always believed that was a mortal sin of omission. And I used to always believe you share equally. But then to make excuses for these people, because you don't want to knock them all out, because you're knocking more people out, I said, well, if he didn't believe in the heresy himself, or he believed the Pope was the supreme head of the church, and if he really didn't believe in the heresy, but he just was afraid, well, then he doesn't share equally in the guilt. He's not a formal heretic. No, he is. He is a formal heretic. In other words, your silence in this case, like it says in the Thomas More movie, even the More book, I covered my base on that. I was holding it back. I changed it because here's what you're thinking about. Wow, not only are all these popes out, but even all the saints that went into these churches and never condemned the popes. Well, if they didn't condemn the pope, they'd be guilty of a sin or omission. Mortal sin, yeah, but they wouldn't fall out for idolatry. You know, no, they do. They do. Now you're not only knocking out all these popes for the 700 years. You're knocking out everybody. Like, even if Philip Neri may not be a saint, there's a lot of evidence against him even. See, and so all this stuff you're looking at, how could it be, you know? All your heroes are getting knocked down. And I'm making excuses. So I'm saying, well, you know, if the guy doesn't believe in the heresy in his heart, and it's not a sin of commission now. It's not like the lapsy. See, the lapsy crime is where they went out there, they didn't believe in the idol, but they offered up incense to it. That was a sin of commission. And they're guilty. And that's also what makes the guy guilty of idolatry, too, about it. Even though he didn't worship, but he still set it up. And I said setting up an idol is like a form of, is a form of worship. You are. You're setting it up. It's a form of worship and adoration. But the sin of omission is a little bit different because you're not saying anything. So you're saying the guy didn't say a heresy. He just didn't say, he just didn't condemn it. I know he didn't condemn it, but he was bound to do it. He was obliged. I asked Thomas More. Thomas, you know, is the king of England the head of the church or not? I ain't going to tell you. He's already guilty. Now, the basic dogma is he's not just guilty of a mortal sin of omission. He's guilty of denying the dogma that the Pope is the supreme head of the church, even though he believes it. Why? Because he didn't profess it. So that's, and you become a heretic. That makes him a formal heretic. That's a basic dogma. I call that natural law even. The Zulu on Island would tell you that if you don't condemn a sin for what it is or denounce a sinner, even in a pagan secular court, you share in the guilt. A bank robber, a murderer, you know he murdered, and you don't say he committed a murder, you refuse to say it. So now why did I deny that? Because I'm looking at the implications, I'm going, wow, what's that going to do to all these people? Cardinal, all the cardinals were out anyway, so we're not talking about the people that were in Rome, you see? Or not only would all the popes be out, the cardinals will be out, then you're thinking about the layman and everybody who knew about it, and if they didn't sufficiently condemn it, and everybody who didn't call the pope an idolater, and they knew he set up a statue. So anybody who knew that the pope set up a statue like that, and it was an idol and a false god, and they didn't condemn him as an idolater, they're all out. So all this I'm making excuses because I don't want to believe that all these people are being knocked out. This is until recently, but when I did the desecration of St. Peter's Basilica, that was it for me because then I laid the law down. I said it. These guys aren't popes. They're not cardinals. And anyone else did this. And that's why it led me over to this. Now finally, because when I saw the door, it really got me enraged. But I knew it before. We had red stuff that they were doing before, but the door was sort of was just something like in your face. It was so much there that it was the proof, but it was the moment of the overwhelming evidence that tipped the scales, and so I was able then to come out and say, hey, yeah, we ain't got no pope for 700 years. Get rid of the human respect, your mortal sins, Richard, and now you can come on and hold everything you held before that even. So as we go over these, it all relates to what we're saying. Religious communion, too, I was wrong on that one. I'll go over them one at a time when we're done here. And on all these points, I was out of the church on for a certain period of time, depending on when I held. I don't remember when I began to hold them again. But I know I abjured from them anything I held this week. One of them I already abjured from the religious, defending and supporting heretics. I did that back in 2011 or 2012. I changed the position on it. But I need to say that that was a basic dogma. So even that put me out. So, I was talking to the sisters on this. It gets a little deeper, but it's true because I've been praying on this, and God, and I'll make it. I don't want to make no excuses for my sins, you know. And I keep thinking, God showed me. I said, Amos, some things that may be Amos' curse where you don't even have all the teachings. And God says, I don't care. If you didn't have it, it's a basic dogma, it's a curse. You had to go find it. And until then, you're out. And if you had it and denied it, you're out. I was talking about, in particular, the teaching of defenders and supporters of heretics and their heresy. Let's just use this as an example now. And we're going to go back. This is before I'm even knocking out these really bad guys from 1445. I looked at the 1970 Code of Canon Law, human respect. Not for the code. I had no respect. I was not worried about saying there's a heresy in the code. But what does it mean if there's a heresy in the code? Benedict XV is an anti-pope, apostate. And so is anybody after him. If I can do this audio good enough, then I'm going to post it because this is going to help a lot of people. And in many ways, the evil I've done could turn to good for other people. I don't make excuses for it, but everyone's going to be trapped on this, and this is going to really help in the end. I'm going to tell you why, too. But let me just finish as we go on with the defending and supporting heretics. The reason I say this can help people is because if people come out and say, look at Ibrani, he said he was a former heretic because these posts really were idolaters. And yeah, I was. Okay, so you agree I was. Yeah, okay. So then they are idolaters, right? So then if they're idolaters, You have to make the statement that for 700 years, there were no popes. Even we have people call up here making excuses. They're only human and all that. No, stop making the excuses. Anyway, before we got the bulk of these guys running, I was afraid to even accuse Pius XII of being an apostate anti-pope. Because you're going to say, wow, now he's knocking out all the popes. He's a crazy man and all that. No, but that was the human respect I first had. I wasn't even wanting to go back to Pius XII. So the first ice was broken on Pius XII, the natural family planning. You know, the big one was Pius IX on the Salvation Dogma. That came later. But before I was able to get him on the Salvation, because I said, no, I can't make excuses for him no more on Singulari Qui Dem, and I got the original translation of it, then I knew I can't make excuses for him. So I got him out. Then the ice started to break. I was able to condemn more of these guys. But going back in the beginning, you're talking about the 1970 Code of Canon Law. I don't care about... I knew there were things in it that were really bad. Now, one of the ones that I knew was bad, and then all of a sudden I held it because I embraced the heretical theology, was Canon 2316. Anybody who defends and supports a heretic in their heresy is only suspect of heresy. This, I thank God for this week anyway, in many ways. I told the sisters, it's like I got 2,000 ton elephant off my back. I've been feeling bad about this stuff for a long time anyway. And then you know, you're back and forth. Alright, so now I'm looking at that code, Canon 2316, and I said anybody who defends and supports a heretic in their heresy. Now there's a big difference between that. Here's the basic dogma, and I tell you my dilemma. I always held it in the beginning. Anybody who defends or supports or favors, defends or supports a heretic in his heresy is a heretic. I always say, in the beginning, here's what I used to always say. And then I changed all of it. Anybody who doesn't condemn a heretic is a heretic. Anybody who doesn't denounce a heretic is a heretic. Anybody who praises and religious communion with a heretic is a heretic. Anybody who favors, defends, or supports a heretic is a heretic. I always held that in the beginning. Then I started denying them all like dominoes to make excuses for popes and bad laws. Now, that's as easy as it is. And even you would catch me sometimes saying that, and they go, no, Rich, you said he's only gravely suspect of heresy. Now, oh, that's right. Yeah. It's a grave suspect of heresy, you know. I'd even say it, because it's an instinct. But why did I deny that dogma? Well, it's in the 1970 Code of Canon Law, Canon 2316, where anybody who defends or favors a heretic is only suspect of heresy. He must be warned, and then after he's warned, 6 months later, if he doesn't amend his way, then you can condemn him as a heretic. So you got to go through this whole process. Now, it's very interesting. I'm going to show you how this progressed. At first I came out and said, didn't want to condemn that law that I knew was bad, because if I condemned it, I got to knock out Benedict XV, who's the one who promulgated the law, and the guys after it. I said, boy, now we're going back and nicking out Benedict XV, everybody that had the law, so human respect again. I didn't want to call him an apostate anti-pope, so I went, well, that law must be all right. So, but I knew it wasn't good, so I called it a sinful law. I called it a harmful law. I didn't like it. If you go back to the early teachings from 1,000 back and all that, they said anybody defends or supports a heretic in his heresies, anathema, automatically excommunicated. They didn't always say he was a heretic, but that's what he is. He's a heretic. Because he shares in the guilt of the guy equally. Now, so my next stage was to say, okay, it's not just suspicion and they have to wait for 6 months. I held that heresy for a while, but then I rejected it. It can't be true. What happens in the days we're living in when nobody's around to warn them? They can be suspect forever and walk around spreading their heresy. So I said, well, no, they're gravely suspect and automatically excommunicated. Well, that's not right neither. They are automatically excommunicated, but they're former heretics. They share equally in the guilt of the person who they're defending and supporting. And then it goes back to our proper interpretation of the Fourth Lateran Council, which very well may be invalid. We're studying these popes back then, and we got problems back then. But it explained. It was still written correctly, though. It was really good. We studied that for about a month here, or maybe 3 weeks at least. There's a big difference between defending and supporting heretics in their material needs, like giving them food and shelter, which at times is allowable, and according to the current disciplinary law, it's not allowable. So if the current disciplinary law says you're not allowed to give shelter or food to a heretic, you better not do it, or you're going to be punished, warned, and then given 6 months, and if you're still given a material support, they can excommunicate you. That's different. That's supporting a heretic in his material needs. And sometimes you even have to do, like St. Monica when she was living with her husband. She fed him and gave him shelter. So the Diamond Brothers use that out of context to make you think you're talking about heresy. So when you clearly read that Fourth Lateran Council, it's talking about people who defend not one clause, who defend and support heretics and their material needs are punished. After they're punished and warned, if they're that way after 6 months, then they're heretics. But right above it, it says, however, anybody who is suspect of heresy has to be avoided immediately. Immediately avoided, and unless they amend their ways, they're excommunicated. So it said, here's suspicion of heresy. So look, it's a much harder crime when you're talking about heresy being involved. So how can defenders and supporters of heretics and their heresy not at least be guilty of that and be avoided immediately? I don't want to get too deep on it, but I'm going to explain it later how it fits. Because even in the first thing, then, when they are talking about heretics, they anathematize them all, whether they're sentenced or not, and they have to be avoided. Anyway, now that gets a little kind of deep, right? But the basic dogma is not deep. The basic dogma is natural instinct. When I first came into this, anybody who defends or supports a heretic in his heresy is a heretic. Let's just get to the bottom of it. That's the basic dogma. Now, you could say to yourself, here's the devil fools you. Richard, do you think you're really guilty? You know, as your average person, you go back and, yeah, I am guilty. I'm going to tell you why. Even if I didn't know and I was inculpably ignorant, it's a basic dogma. It's an Amos curse. God allowed it. We were all under it. And we're all coming out of it. And we only come out of it by praying, studying, and searching. And in this case, all I had to do, and it wasn't impossible, was go back and look what the early councils teach on guys who defend and support heretics and heresy. Anathema, anathema, anathema. Out, out. No one ever said that, made these stipulations where they can be that way for 6 months, then they got to be warned and all that. So I did a little bit of studying and I found it. But even until then, even if I was inculpably ignorant, I was still guilty because everyone has to believe in basic dogmas to be in the way of salvation and to be Catholic. And that's another thing, topic we're going to get on in there. But I'm just trying to warn all the people, all the tricks the devil pulls on you by making you believe you're not guilty, it's not your fault, don't worry about it. And I will tell you one thing. That it is, anyone who's been out in this fight knows, and we've all had it, we've seen it with a lot of these other people we've been debating, who came out and admitted even. The biggest things were canonizations aren't infallible, and the so-called popes losing their office, kind of, or just being heretics. Even if you don't believe in the ban from the office, you better call them an idolatry at least. If they don't believe popes can become idolaters or formal heretics, or you know, they believe somebody who you think is a saint, you're saints. These are the biggest things you have to knock down, chop these things down to get where you are to this position. Are you going to be listening to somebody who you think is a saint and he's holding a heresy and you know it's a heresy, but you can make an excuse for him? So you're idolizing the saints or you're idolizing the popes. Now, these, remember the one people were debating and they realized, I agree, Richard, that canonization of saints aren't fallible, but you still can't condemn no saint because the popes had all the evidence and all that. And I said, look, if they're not infallible, they're fallible. And if they're fallible, then that means, guess what? That guy may not be a saint. And if he holds a heresy, you better call him a formal heretic, if especially denying a basic dogma like Alphonse's. And so now you got these people that were pretty bold. These were people that even believed Leo XIII was not the Pope, before I did even. And they were right on that. They said Leo XIII is not the Pope, Benedict XV is not the Pope, these guys are all anti-popes. They were right about that. But they didn't want to bite the bullet when it went back 700 years. They weren't prepared to go back that far. So they had their little limits on how far back they're going to go. They had their limits when it came to condemning saints. I said, well, if you believe canonizations are fallible, then you better, you know, and that's what God's testing all of us. I don't care what any man on this earth could fall into any type of sin that can be committed, and you better not idolize popes, saints, or nobody. And that's the sin I caused that got me into all kinds of trouble from day one. At first, I was idolizing the Vatican II anti-popes. And I didn't want to call them anti-popes for a long time, so I stayed up in a monastery and went along with that dummy diamond head for a long time, and not speaking out to what I believed. And finally I did, and then I got into trouble. And so then I finally at least breached that, and I was able to condemn those bums. But if you're able to condemn those bums for those crimes, and then you realize the same crimes are being committed for 700 years and worse even, then you got to condemn them too. So every time I'm getting into trouble, I'm going against what I already basically knew, what even common sense, Catholic common sense can tell you, because I'm making excuses for human respect. I don't want to believe it's possible that you could have had all these people that were non-popes for 700 years, and all these saints that did all these miracles that really weren't miracles, or they were only miracles for the benefit of others. You better overcome all of that, and if you don't, you're in trouble. Now, you're going to come down, and Dimer Boats, people want to pick up. I'm going to be posting this up, and you say, oh, I brand, he finally admitted again he wasn't Catholic. Look, he came out and he said that he believed that these apostate, these popes, so-called popes, when he put the idols up, were not guilty of idolatry because they didn't believe in the idols. Now he believes that they're guilty of idolatry, and that's right, they are idolaters. Oh, wait a second. If they are idolaters, then what? then you have to go along with what I just said. If you believe in the loss of office teachings like the Sedevi Cantus do, then you have to say that these guys weren't pope. We had no pope for 700 years. And then you have to also agree with the other teachings that anybody that didn't condemn it or didn't denounce it properly is guilty of idolatry. It's a whole chain reaction. You got to accept the whole thing. And then if they come out and say, well, however, or you try to say, Richard, he's being too extreme on himself. I think he was right the first time. They really weren't guilty of idolatry. They were only suspect of it because they didn't really believe in the idol. Okay, you want to believe that? Go ahead. Then how can you condemn John Paul II for putting the boot on top of the tabernacle in Assisi? All you had to do was go up and ask him, do you really believe Buddha's God? And he would say, I don't believe he's God, but it was out of respect for the Buddhists. All right? So then he's not guilty. He wouldn't be guilty based upon the theology I was even recently holding. So, you know, and if you read my book of evidence, this is before I even believed it was an apostate anti-pope, I called him an idolater. Now, I'm not calling, I'm saying now they're only suspect of heresy because I didn't want to say, wow, if this is true, we don't got nobody in there for 700 years, no pope or no cardinals. All right, so this lecture may turn out to be a benefit to people, show what the pitfalls that you fall into. Now, all this stuff I'm talking about, stuff you'll even catch me on some of my lectures coming out and saying the basic dogma and then correcting myself off the basic dogma. Anybody doesn't condemn a heretic is a heretic. Well, I mean, it all depends on if he believes in heresy himself. If he doesn't believe in a heresy, then he's guilty of a mortal sin of omission. He's suspect of heresy. I believe that. But I didn't call him a heretic. For example, in my recent article in December 2012 titled Cajetans and Bellarmines, Heresies on Formal Heretics and Loss of Papal Office, I denied the dogma, and in the very next paragraph, I held the dogma. I quote, here's the first paragraph. Even though the notorious heretic Bellarmine refuted Cajetan's belief, he did so insufficiently. He did not condemn Cajetan's belief as heresy, and thus he did not denounce Cajetan as a notorious heretic. Hence, Bellarmine is suspect of heresy on this point alone for defending and patronizing a heresy and a heretic by presenting the heresy as an allowable opinion and the heretic as not a heretic. There I denied the dogma. But in the very next paragraph I say, the scholastics and other modern theologians expound the most abominable heresies and do not condemn one another's heresies as heresy, nor denounce one another as heretics. Instead, they refer to their heresies as errors, or some other non-heretical label. They are all guilty of mortal sins of omission, non-judgmentalism, and non-punishmentalism, and hence are formal heretics for not condemning heresy as heresy, and not denouncing heretics as heretics. Consequently, they're automatically excommunicated on this point alone. So here, I'm holding the dogma, saying that if you do not denounce a heretic as a heretic, he's a heretic. And in this very article, you see me going back and forth on the two positions. Just remember what I'm going to say right now. It really comes down to this. Anybody who does not denounce a heretic when he should know he's a heretic or knows he's a heretic as a heretic, he's a heretic. You pray with the heretic, you're a heretic. It's that simple. You defend and support a heretic in his heresy, you're a heretic. Just remember that. And don't ever go off of that and don't budge from it. Those are basic dogmas. I budged from it because I was making excuses for people. Because I was trying to get them off the hook and keep them inside the Catholic Church so we still had popes for 700 years or whatever, all these different excuses you're making. And it's not because I didn't already know what it was. And it's not that. But then you got all the theology books backing it up too. So now, then you're looking at it and you're saying, well, all these theologians, and I didn't have much respect for the theologians, but when you get somebody like Alphonsus, who you believe, at that time, let's say you don't have the canonizations or found, you think he's a saint, and you read about all the miracles he did, or you think Aquinas is a saint, and you look at what he's teaching, now it gets even more difficult. So these are the two things that most people, I would say, are going to be guilty of mortal sins of human respect in idolizing popes and saints. Those are the biggest things. I can't say it enough to you. Get rid of your idolization of popes and saints. I don't care if they appear to do 2,000 billion miracles. It was either from the devil or God. It was a true miracle to help convert other people. That you better get into your head, and don't let it move you off the rock any different way from the truth. From what you know to be the truth. And then, and sometimes, yeah, you may have to go back like I did when I was looking at this bad canon law and the suspicion, the defending the supporters of heretics and heresy. Then I system reordered about 5 or 6 books on how they treated heretics. The Inquisitions, back in the early church, I was reading it, defending and supporting. Then I got the teachings, I was solidified in it. So now I can say, well, Lord, I did my work. I was diligent. Yeah, you did your work, but you already held it in the first place. You should have held it and did your work to defend the dogma. You do it the other way around. You hold the dogma and find evidence to defend the dogma. But even if I was inculpably ignorant of it, it's the Amos curse. I didn't come to it till now, then I was out till now. I said it when I did this desecration of St. Peter's Basilica, I feel like it's the second coming speech all over again. It's like we really are starting out now with everything. It's a new start. It's a new going forward. All this stuff that I always wanted to say, wanted to do, knew in my heart was right, is right. And not only is it, it's a basic dogmas. In other words, get away from me with these wishy-washy excuses. And myself, get away with me for my own human respect. My mortal sins. My mortal sins of not wanting to call these people antipopes. Because I don't want to think that it's possible. It first starts with all of them, I'm sure. You know, if these guys start going back before the Vatican to apostate antipopes, then they're goofy, they're crazy, you know, or whatever it is. Or even yourself. It's not even goofy. You're not worried about being called crazy. But it's almost you think, wow, the whole church is gone. What's going to happen? Nobody for 100 years? And the big thing is to realize, and you don't even need to have long Catholics for the church to survive. So I'm not saying there weren't no Catholics for 700 years. There were. There were a few Catholics, I'm sure, about that. Really even good ones that were out in the mountains hiding out. But guarantee you, they could not get into theology schools. They couldn't become so-called cardinals and all that. And then I start thinking about a couple of days. I said, like, if you came into my house and you saw me have a Zeus up on my altar, I'm done for. I'm on my altar. Next to the cross. It's not like Richard's suspect of hers. I don't believe in Zeus, but I don't really believe in Zeus, but he's neat. I'm an idolater. That's it. And when I heard myself say that back in 2007 on the Root of the Great Apostasy, because we were, and I'm saying, well, I'm not saying all these popes are heretics. So only if they believed in the idol and believed it was a true God, and or they worshipped it, or he gave you some type of adoration. So if they just set it up and said, I don't believe in it, I don't worship it, but it's a neat thing. That's idolatry too. Sorry. And that's a basic dogma. That's the first commandment. I started thinking about it already when I was doing a thing on the Maccabees when they set up the statue of Jupiter inside the temple. They went nuts. They went crazy. They chopped the people in half. You're out. You're done. It was no, like, you know, you're suspect and, you know, whatever it is. Wishy-washy garbage. Well, these are the basic dogmas that I found myself denying because of all this stuff that just... And some of them I already don't hold anymore, but I never abjured from it. So then I'd be like the Diamond Brothers, right? Well, in 2011 or 2012, I already held the dogma. I forget which one it was. On defending and supporting heretics. I think it was that one. I knew that then it was a dogma that they're heretics. But I wrote it down. I have it there. But my whole question was, was it a basic or deeper dogma? And it is a basic dogma. It is. So I was guilty. So I was out. And I have to say it. I have to admit it. I'm not going to hide my stuff. I'm going to go back and correct my stuff now. That's another issue. I've got to go back and sift through my stuff. I've been correcting a lot of the books already on all this. But here I'm going to tell you on the religious communion thing, how I was wrong on how I went through this. First, I believed anybody who's in religious communion with a non-Catholic is a heretic, is a not-Catholic. I always believed that in the beginning. Bad theology books, excuse for rotten popes and all this, and reading their theologies, they will come out and say, anybody who's in performs an act of religious communion knowingly with a non-Catholic, if the rite is orthodox and not heretical, is suspect of heresy. So I believe that. I went along with that. That's not true. You're a heretic. Because it's more than you're giving him approbation. You want to talk about defending and supporting a heretic. No better defense can give him than you're praying with him. That you're telling him that his religion is okay. No, you're not suspect. You're a heretic. But I believe they were suspect. But I believe they were excommunicated. So the teaching, if you read it, they'll say, in the canon laws under these apostate antipopes, is gravely suspect of heresy and is automatically excommunicated. That was the older, what I call it, the good law. The 1970 Code of Canon Law removed the automatic excommunication and said they were just suspect and you had to warn them. So, but I always held that if the act, that the religious act was unorthodox or heretical, then they are heretics. Because it was a sin of commission, it's like professing belief in a heresy. I always believed that. My heresy was, if they're praying with non-Catholics an Our Father prayer, now I held, in my recent thing with the Chicago conference, I held the door. I corrected myself. It's even right. I got it right in the book. In other words, I then held it, but I can't just hold it, sweep it under the rug and say, well, everything's okay, I didn't do anything wrong. But here's the progression. It's not suspicion of heresy, even if the prayer is orthodox. Because if I'm praying an Our Father prayer with some bunch of Anglicans, it's not a matter of the prayer, it's a matter of I'm giving them justification in their whole false religion. I'm a formal heretic for doing that. And I don't care if the prayer is orthodox. Now that's the teaching when you go back and study it. That's what it always was. Until these modern theologians came along. So, what I held then was, The second stage I held was, okay, this is until recently, I said, okay, they're not gravely suspect. They're heretics. But it's a deeper dogma. Because some people might think this. I'm going to give you how I think so you don't fall into the trap. Some people might think, well, he prayed the Our Father prayer with the Anglicans. It wasn't a heretical prayer, so he didn't profess heresy. I asked him after the prayer, do you believe the Anglicans is a true religion? No, it's a false religion and they're going to go to hell. So he's not a heretic. So I said, most people might think that. So they would say, therefore, he's only suspect of heresy maybe, but he's not a heretic. And most people are going to be thinking that and they're going to get off the hook. So it's a deeper dogma that he really is a heretic because he's not supposed to do that. He really shares. It's a deeper dogma. That was the next stage. No, it's not a deeper dogma. Yeah. It's a basic dogma. Yeah. It's an ABC-er. It's something that if you're a Zulu who believed in something and you say, well, ours is the only true Zulu religion, you see him going over there praying with these other guys who are your mortal enemies in religion, and he's praying with them, you say, you're out. I don't care whether you say you believe in it or not. It's sort of like common sense, even almost attached to the natural law. It's not a deeper dogma. So the next and the final stage is, it's a basic dogma. You cannot knowingly pray with non-Catholics, no matter what, or you become a non-Catholic. Done! It's a basic dogma, not even a deeper dogma that you become a non-Catholic. That's the last stage.
It needs to be mentioned that it is a deeper dogma that a Catholic's belief that a basic dogma is a deeper dogma, or a deeper dogma is a basic dogma, is not a sinful error, and thus he is not a formal or material heretic because he at least believes it is a dogma.
Now, I'm writing about all this, and all these different stages that you go through, so I'm going to post it up on the internet under RGMI's 2013 abjuration, and it's going to include deeper dogmas, too. Next week, we're going to go over deeper dogmas. I have a list of those, too, but I want to get these that are the most important, because these are the things that will place you out of the church. If you didn't believe in anything that you're going to be reading here, then you're out of the church. Just sign it, and you're in the church. The worst thing I think of is not only am I going to hell, I'm going to drag all you to hell with me. I always said that. I know how important my work is. It's so important here that if I don't get it right, we're all going to hell. That's why you notice too, we're not out here trying to do a lot of these corporal works and all that right now. My job is to get in the faith right. We're doing a little bit of that. You get some interferences in here, but if I don't get this thing right, who cares if we do all the good works in the world? We're all going to hell. I need to get the faith down 100%, and I'm actually going back now to what I always believed anyway, what I wanted to believe, which is easy to believe, which is common sense. I call it even Catholic common sense. And then you find yourself writing books very burdensome and very much to try to explain all these different situations. And I just said it to you right here, and this is what it is. It's that easy. Anybody who doesn't condemn a heretic, he's a formal heretic himself when he's obliged to. Anybody that doesn't denounce a heretic when he's obliged to, he's a formal heretic. Anybody who's in religious communion with a heretic and he knows the guy's a heretic, he's a formal heretic. That's CDR, Condemn, Denounce, Religious Communion. And anybody who sets up an idol in the Vatican and glorifies it, or any image against the faith, he's an idolater or a formal heretic, depending on what the image is. If it's an image of a Protestant he puts up in a so-called Catholic church and glorifies a Protestant heretic, then he's a formal heretic. It doesn't matter whether he believes in the idol or not. These are the real base things that we're talking about you're going to be reading here. Now, in the last one, which I just came to last night, this is very big. And I was praying on this one too, because this was bugging me for a long time also. I'll read it and then I'll explain it to you. On the guilt for inculpable ignorance of a basic dogma. It is a basic dogma that baptized persons with the use of reason who are inculpably ignorant of a basic dogma are not in the way of salvation and not Catholic. Now, that first part I held, I said they're not in the way of salvation. Augustine originally taught that, and I'm going to tell you how it relates. It's very important. First, I'll tell you who we're talking about here. Somebody who adheres to the Catholic Church, goes to a Catholic Church, thinks he's Catholic, wants to be Catholic, he's baptized, and he doesn't know a basic dogma. No one taught it to him. He's inculpably ignorant of it. Somebody forgot to teach it to him for some reason or whatever. Well, my opinion is he's a formal heretic, and he's not Catholic. Now, I knew he couldn't be saved. Because if you read even the apostate anti-pope's teachings on this, and even the true pope, the Great even came out and said, there's certain dogmas you need to believe in to be saved. So they all say that. So one thing I always believed is, well, I don't care. He doesn't believe in a basic dogma. He can't be saved. He's on the road to hell. I always believed that. Did Augustine always believe that? What did Augustine believe? Well, it's clear what he was believing now when last night I was able to see everything on how it fits. Augustine came out and said, let's say we get a guy who's baptized in the Catholic Church, goes to a Catholic church, and believes Mary's not the mother of God and Jesus is just a man. The Hersa Photinus. You remember we were talking about Photius. Photinus. Now we got another guy who's baptized outside the Catholic Church and he holds the same heresy. He goes, I don't consider the guy who was baptized inside the Catholic Church yet a heretic till he's admonished and then he shows obstinacy and clearly doesn't accept the dogma. Only then do I believe he's a heretic. Now there's problems. It could be real big problems on that. But the other guy, he goes, has two problems. His schism and his error has to be corrected. The other guy, only his error has to be corrected. So Augustine's not saying that guy who believes Jesus is not God doesn't need to be corrected. He says he's required to be corrected. Augustine never said he could be saved that way. Never said he could be saved that way. He didn't say he could be saved, and he didn't even say he was Catholic. Proof of that was elsewhere, in the same years when Augustus is teaching, he comes out and says, anybody who believes that Mary is not the mother of God and Jesus is not God is not even a Christian, nor could he be saved. Now I got a problem. Well, then what about this guy Augustine was just talking about? He thinks he's in the Catholic Church. He goes to a Catholic Church. He believes Jesus isn't God. And Augustine said he's not a heretic till he's warned and all. So what is he? He's not a Christian. So I wrote about this already. My opinion was that Augustine's obviously saying he can't be saved. He's not a Christian. I said he's contradicting himself. He should have really understood, thought this thing out. I said, but he couldn't have believed he's in the way of salvation or he would have been a heretic. So I said, that guy's not in the way of salvation is a basic dogma. Augustine even believed that. I said, however, he has to be a former heretic because he's not believing the basic dogma, even though he's inculpably ignorant, but you need to believe in it, and that's why he's out of the church, because he's a former heretic. He had to commit some type of a mortal sin. I was trying to figure out what is Augustine getting at here last night to make sure I get this whole thing right. And then I started thinking, it's odious to any of us, going back to Catholic common sense, that if somebody came up and said to you, this guy don't believe Jesus is God, you're going to say he's a Catholic. You ain't Catholic. I don't care until you believe it. Sorry, pal. I know you're, even if you're inculpably ignorant and no one ever told you, you're still not Catholic. I says, I got to believe, Augustine would believe that. And he really is. Here's what he was teaching. I prayed about this last night, and I came to it last night, and this morning I got a final last piece on it. What he's teaching is, and because clearly, on one hand he says the guy's not a heretic, but he's not a Christian. So what is he? He's a catechumen. He's in the status of a catechumen who's preparing to come into the Catholic Church, who doesn't have all the dogmas yet. Even though he doesn't know he's a catechumen, he is. In other words, take it step by step. Augustine would look at him as now a catechumen who needs to be instructed, who's required to be told the truth. Because if he's not told the truth, he can't be in the way of salvation. He's a catechumen. So what happens, and this fits the dogma that, well, let's talk with the person who's a use of reason. And let's take, and you could have a baptized person who's a catechumen, like an ex-Protestant who wants to become a Catholic. What does he do? He has to first, for 1 year, study the Catholic faith before he comes into the church, even though he's baptized. But let's take a guy who has the use of reason. He's studying, there's two situations we're going to go over. It gets a little deep, but it still comes down to this. Sort of like maybe what Augustine's talking about. He's got the use of reason and he wants to become Catholic. He gets baptized into the true Catholic Church, and really he's in a real Catholic Church, but somebody forgot to teach him all the basic dogmas. He's missing two or three of them. That guy really doesn't come into the Catholic Church. He remains a catechumen, because you need to have the faith to get sanctifying grace. He doesn't have the faith there, okay? So, but there's two things he's guilty of. We're going to get into it in a minute. The main thing is that he doesn't have the faith because he doesn't know all the basic dogmas. So whether he knows it or not, he's still a catechumen. His baptism only gives him the indelible mark, but not the other gifts of baptism of sanctifying grace and membership in the Catholic Church. As soon as somebody teaches him a basic dogma that he doesn't know, he then comes into the Catholic Church and gets all the gifts. I'm talking about a guy who's getting baptized into the Catholic Church. He gets all the gifts and all, because now somebody taught him about the basic dogmas. Now, that's the guy, that's one case. But Protestants are getting baptized outside the Catholic Church into formal schism. They got a big problem. So the guy that's believing in any heresy outside the Catholic Church, his first problem is not even heresy. It's formal schism. He's out of the church, so that's why you're gone. I don't care if you're a heretic or not. You're out because of formal schism. That's the first reason you're out. That's what Augustine says. Even. So this guy, his first biggest problem is he's a formal schism. He doesn't even hear to the Catholic Church. Now, a catechumen, adheres to the Catholic Church. He's a friend of the Catholic Church. He's not, in the strict sense of the word, he's not a Catholic. He's a Catholic in vow. He's not a Christian. It fits. So here's Augustine's example of, here's a guy at this one hand, he's not a Christian, but he's not a heretic. So I went to think it got that part of it. And I said, okay, that's what Augustine's teaching, clearly. And Augustine even said, this other guy's got a double problem. He's in schism, he's an enemy to the Church. So his schism needs to be corrected along with his erroneous opinions. The other guy, only his heresy has to be corrected. He has to be taught the basic dogma. So there's your guy who is not a Christian, but he's adhering to the Catholic Church. That's the definition of a catechumen. We've had him in here. We even call him brothers. They're not really strictly brothers. You're allowed to do it, though. But they call him Catholic in vow. They're not strictly Christians. They're Christian in vow. They're not really strictly Christians. So, but you treat them as a brother because they're coming into the church and they're friendly to the church and they're adhering to the church, although they're not inside the church. There's the distinction. Now, what happened was, then I had one more piece to the puzzle. And then this ends it. And then you can read about it. It's basically written here. You just believe what's written here and then you'll be covered. You'll understand it if you want to get into the deeper details, which I'll explain the last part of it. I woke up this morning and said, what about the infant who's baptized in the Catholic Church? He's in it. And he comes to the use of reason. This is really good. I can't explain to you in a million ways now. It's going to be hard for me to explain everything to you now, but you'll understand when I write the book. Everything's going to be a lot easier now. This kid comes to the use of reason. He's 7 years old. He's Catholic. He was Catholic as an infant. And he's not taught all the basic dogmas. Two of them were left off. And he's just got the use of reason. Okay, what happens to him? Now, he was Catholic. He has to fall out. Yeah, he falls out of the church as a catechumen. Why? But he has to commit a mortal sin. You don't go from a state of grace to a non-state of grace without committing a mortal sin. This was the last piece of the puzzle. Where a catechumen is a nominal Catholic who inculpably doubts or denies, doesn't know a basic dogma, commits a mortal sin for not knowing or believing a basic dogma, which is a mortal sin of disobedience. And if they're not knowing or believing a basic dogma is culpable, they also commit a mortal sin of heresy, and thus are former heretics. It is a basic dogma that men must know and believe all the basic dogmas of the Catholic Church in order to be Catholic and in the way of salvation. This law binds all men under pain of not being able to be Catholic, and it also binds Catholics and nominal Catholics under pain of the mortal sin of disobedience. And because this basic dogma and law is necessary to obey as a necessity of means, no one can be excused from obeying it by any kind of ignorance.
You know, when I wrote about the thing in Augustine, I did cover this based on what he probably believed. I said maybe that's what Augustine believed, and he wasn't yet Catholic, but he was going to be Catholic. So what are they disobedient to? They're disobedient to that, and it's by a necessity of means. Necessity of means that if they don't know about the basic dogmas, it doesn't matter, they're guilty. They're culpable. That's called, when you have a law that's called a necessity of means, it means it doesn't matter whether you know about the law or not. You break it, you're guilty. So everyone who is inculpably ignorant of a basic dogma is guilty for disobeying that law, which says you must know all the basic dogmas. No excuses for ignorance. Anybody who knows about necessity means knows what that means. There's no excuse for it. So even the guy with the use of reason who's studying to come in, the infant that grows up, what happens to him is he commits a mortal sin for not knowing or believing a basic dogma, which is a mortal sin of disobedience. Because he doesn't know all the basic dogmas, and he falls out of the church as a catechumen. He becomes a catechumen. He's adhering to the Catholic Church, though. He's friendly to the Catholic Church, but he's not a Christian. Until he then, 8 years old, this makes sense too, because a lot of times you can see this happening. A kid just reaches the use of reason. He might not have them all. Is God going to knock the guy completely out and make him a former heretic and throw him out of the whole church completely? But he does knock him out as a catechumen. So he's now preparing to enter the church, because unfortunately his parents weren't diligent. They didn't teach him the basic dogmas by rote before he achieved the use of reason. So now the kid reaches the use of reason. He doesn't know two basic dogmas that he's got to know. He's guilty of mortal sin and puts him on the road to hell and places him outside the church as a catechumen. So he's still adhering to the church. He's friendly to the church. He's a catechumen. 8 years old, someone. Now, here's the other point. We're talking about people that are adhering to a Catholic church, not a non-Catholic church. So if it's a Catholic church, the dogmas are being taught in the church. He's not going to go along very long believing that without somebody catching him and teaching him. So the church, the very church he's going to is a Catholic church. They hear him say something he doesn't believe in on the basis of, no, but you're wrong. This is what it is. He's going to learn it sooner or later. So as soon as that infant then embraces those two basic dogmas that he was missing, he then comes into the Catholic Church, back into the Catholic Church again in his mortal sin if disobedience is remitted. That's how he comes back in again. And that answers what St. Augustine was trying to say. Now, I was getting a little bit angry at St. Augustine last night, saying, how come you didn't explain this thing a little more? Back then, they didn't have this problem. They understood. Just, well, I didn't say he was Catholic. I never meant that. All I said he needs to be corrected. He's like a catechumen. He's somebody who needs to be taught, but he's not a heretic. And Augustine was really right, though. Here's the Protestant's position. If he's inculpably ignorant of a basic dogma, he's outside the Catholic Church already as a formal schismatic and an enemy to the Church, so he doesn't become a catechumen. So he doesn't get the advantage of being a catechumen because he isn't here to the Catholic Church. So even if he decided to come into the Catholic Church, he would be banned from entering until he believes those basic dogmas. So the Protestant himself is already out as a formal schismatic. Not only is he outside the Church, he's an enemy to the Church. The catechumen is outside the Church, but he's not an enemy. He's a friend to the Church. He adheres to the Church. So it's a little deep what I'm saying here, but it comes down to all this, and I had to rectify it with St. Augustine, or we got him as a heretic and out of the Church. And I know it's what he believed in, because when I read his other teachings, he's clearly saying, now some people say, Rich, do you think God expected you to know all this stuff? Yes, he did, because it's still a basic dogma. He did. I'm making excuses for myself. No, yes, he does. Here's the common sense to this dogma. Don't tell me that somebody can come up and say Jesus isn't God and be Catholic. Then we had the Augustine. Augustine came out, and then the misinterpretation of Augustine, the modern theologians twisting this thing out of context. Well, you better say at least he's not in the way of salvation. You better at least say he's not in the way of salvation. Now, what his guilt is that put him on the road to hell is arguable. He's not Catholic. The argument is this. Here's the allowable opinion. I believe in Augustine's opinion now. I do. He was right about that. The allowable opinions are, which I originally wrote in my book, he's a former heretic whether he knows it or not, you know. That's what places him out of the Church. So he's outside the Church as a former heretic and an enemy to the Church. The other opinion, which you can still hold, which I believe is the true one now, he's a catechumen who's outside the Church, all right, and he's not an enemy to the Church, but he's a catechumen. But he's not Catholic. So the basic dogma in both cases, the catechumen isn't Catholic, the former heretic isn't Catholic. I'm holding the Augustine one now on the catechumen. It makes sense in every other way. It makes sense even, it's so much easier. My books are going to now be so much easier. The point is, that kid who becomes 7 years old and attains the use of reason, and he was not taught by rote all the basic dogmas, so he's denying maybe two or three or four of them. That kid cannot, he's not in the way of salvation, and he cannot be Catholic until he knows the basic dogmas. So, what happens? If he's going to a Catholic church and he's now becomes a catechumen, he falls out of the Church as a catechumen, he commits a mortal sin for not knowing or believing a basic dogma, which is a mortal sin of disobedience. And as soon as somebody teaches him those basic dogmas, a week later, 2 weeks later, a year later, he comes into the Church and he's no longer a catechumen, and he's now a member of the Church. And his mortal sin is remitted. So it fits in 1,000 different ways. And everything is going to be so much simpler, clearer, and easier when it's all done. For an in-depth explanation of this topic, see RJMI article, St. Augustine on Formal Heretics and the Salvation Dogma. It's going to help a lot of people, this thing, when I come out to, because I know all the different arguments have been coming on, and I finally, last night, when I got this, because I want to get all these things out now. Now, if I happen to have another one, I'll bring it up next week, I don't know, but I've been working on this for a while. And especially this now, I wanted to get these out so I can get myself in the Church and get all you back in the Church, if you're not in the Church. When you read this and you consent to this, you're going to be in the Church. And unless I come up with something else, but I know what I've been fighting with for many years on these topics. I know what the struggles are. Now, the deeper dogma things are not as important, because you can deny deeper dogma and you're still Catholic. So I'm going to do those next week. But I needed to get this done this week to make sure everybody's believing in everything that's on this sheet. So all you got to do is read the points on this sheet, can sign it down here that you consent to them. And so if you didn't believe in them, then now you do and you're inside the Catholic Church. But if you always believed in these, then you're okay. If a couple of them you didn't believe in because of my fault, because I was misleading you on what I was teaching, then that's why the first thing I got to do is for myself and everybody's following what I'm teaching out here. But they just don't. I know, like yesterday, the devil tries to fool you and make you think that, you know, you think God's going to hold you accountable for all this difficulty. Yes, he is. And I'll tell you what, just the same way he holds the Indian accountable on a pagan island and never heard the word of God at all. That's the deepest, aimless curse that you can be under, an operation error. So not until, this is not 100% aimless curse. Some of it may be in the beginning. A lot of it's my own fault for human respect. I knew better. My earlier teaching said better. I called J.P. II an idolater for putting a boot on top of the tabernacle. So why did I not call Eugene IV and all these apostate popes following him idolaters? For human respect. Okay, so now let everybody do what I had doing right now. Abjure from denying your basic dogmas and come into the Catholic Church and stop making excuses for apostate popes and so-called saints. That's probably the highest thing. Theology books come second. That is kind of bad. But there's nothing worse if you believe a so-called saint is a saint. Like Alphonse, and he's teaching heresies, then you're going to say, well, then I can hold it too. How many people do I know coming into this, me, on my road into the church, have seen all the saints? You know, Rich, I got a problem. Some of these saints said some crazy things. And everybody makes excuses for it. Well, God allows them to hold heresy so they can fight. No, He doesn't, you know. And you're trying to make excuses. All I'm saying is, do you think God could have allowed us to be so deeply deceived? Yes, and He has. Yes, and He has. Yes, and He has. Because if you look for 700 years, how an idol can stay up on the door, nobody even is condemning that. Huh? Now, the bulk of the people aren't. That's why we're worthy of the Amos curse. That's why God put us so deep under, all of us. And I'm making this lecture to say, don't sit back and think you're innocent. I'm not innocent. You're not innocent. I had people come up. We had that one, I don't want to use his name. And after he saw all of these idols, and he says, about these apostate anti-popes from 1445, and you know what he tells us? His excuse is, they're only human. Whoa! No kidding! They're only human. Whoa! Big revelation. So wait a second. If you're a human, you get off the hook. You can never be guilty because you're human. So what does that mean? All humans are saved. Isn't that what you look at on the news? Every kid that dies is in heaven. Everybody that murders or gets killed, they're all in heaven. Why? Because he's human. Since when is that a teaching in the church that as long as you're a human being, you can never be guilty? Now, if he said, I didn't mean that, then what did you mean by saying they're only human? What did you mean by saying they're only human? Did you mean they can never be guilty? Then shut up with that stupid nonsense. I never said that. That's really dumb. But what I did was still bad enough. I made excuses for the guys. I at least called them rotten, dirty popes. I did do that. I said they're rotten, filthy, stinking, lousy popes. Yeah. Now, you can even believe they're popes if you're invincibly ignorant of the deeper dogma of their ban from office. You really could. That's another issue I spoke about in desecration. But at the end of that lecture, I said, anybody who doesn't call these guys an idolater after looking at this evidence don't even walk on the same street as me. So if I was running into myself in 2007, I'd have to yell at myself to get on the other side of the street for my own self because I was doing the same thing. So again, I'm not making myself to be innocent of anything here. When you that's the whole way you come into the church, or even if you're in mortal sin, you get out of it by humility. And by admitting when you're wrong and looking at these things honestly. Because these things have been gnawing at me for I don't know how long. You say, this is odious. So much so that I, knowing that I even originally held the basic dogma, I would slip and repeat the basic dogma. So, no, Rich, you said that anybody that prays to their heretic, if their prayer is not is orthodox, he's only gravely suspect of heresy and other automatic excommunication. You know, in the beginning, I said, no, he's a heretic. But the modern theology books have all these heresies in them for 500 years, 400 years, catechisms, they're loaded. You got to get rid of all of this. Can God do this and hold us accountable? You better believe He could. Because I'm going to tell you something, if that's not true, then I'm going to end the sermon with this. I'm going to leave you with this scenario, because you're saying we're invincibly ignorant. What happens if you have a real pope that just goes bad in his papacy, and determines that, you know what, the Hindus were really right. He sets up a cow and he says, this cow is God. No, he sets up a golden calf. And he says, this golden calf is God. Jesus isn't God. The Holy Trinity doesn't exist. Burns all the catechisms. Burns all the theology books. Burns all the Catholic, but he still calls himself the Catholic Church. He says, this is the real Catholic teaching. This cow is God. Now, he burned all the other books, so nobody, they're invincibly inculpable. They cannot get the creed. They can't get the teachings. He hides it. He now sets up a cow in the Vatican. He puts other animals up in the Vatican. He offers up animals on the altar. But he got rid of all this other stuff according to that belief that we're not guilty. That means that's really the Catholic Church, and you're all Catholics. Worshiping a cow, offering up animals with cows all over the place, not even believing in the Holy Trinity. As long as he gets rid of all the teachings, hides them from you, that doesn't make sense. No way. There's no way those guys can be even close to being Catholic. And if God ever allowed something like that to happen, you'd say, why did he allow it in the first place? Because you're worthy of it. Because you deserve to be the dupe. That's what I'm saying here now. This is even worse than that. I wish they set a cow up like that. It's easier. But when you've got theology books, a lot of pretend Catholicism, they profess a lot of the dogmas, they still have some of the creeds out there. Yes, this is one of the greatest curses for 700 years. And more, it goes back further than that even. But I'm going to tell you something, when you look at all that evidence, the great apostasy did start way back. All right? And so this is what we have to do. So that's why I printed this sheet out here, at least for the brothers themselves, to read it, consent to it, and sign it. So if you're out of the church, you're in it now when you sign this. So this is very important stuff. And it has a lot more implications. The books are going to be a lot clearer. It's because we got rid of all the crap. And you have to, all the stuff for really 1,000 years. If you want to be safe, you better watch out for anything after the year 1000. You're getting into big trouble after the year 1000. Even 1000 to 1455 is bad. We've been studying that too. You got a lot of bad stuff going on in there. And it was admitted by many people back then that that's when a lot of stuff is, you know. And then 3,000 years, 300 years later, God released Satan from his pit in 1347. But it really was starting in the year 1000. 1,000 it was. And when you go back and read all the earlier teachings, everything was clear cut. It was none of this. It is and it isn't, you know. But I've said this many times. If I go wrong, I could be bringing all the brothers on. I know how important it is and how serious it is what God has given me here. Now, I know how it seems complicated, and we deserve to be punished like this. But it's not complicated, my mortal sin. I know what I did. I know what I did. I made excuses for these rotten guys. I made excuses, and I'm done. I'm sick and tired of it. I started out in the beginning making excuses for apostate Pope John Paul II when I was in Newark, New Jersey. I ain't going to do it anymore. I'm done with it. Completely done with it. And unless you go all the way back to where I'm going, you better all go back into the Vatican II Church under that... Who's the guy in there now? I don't even know who's...
Francis.
Apostate Pope Francis... Go, then you're all going to have to go back into the church under him if you don't listen to what I'm saying. Because you're all technically out of the church anyway. So there's nobody that's not going to have to eat some humble pie. And nobody. And I know all the positions out there. And I know all the problems. And I will say the people that have the best hope of listening to what I'm saying are, and we know some of them, that composed abjurations, that have tried, they have abjured, they weren't so full of pride to admit that they were guilty. I know a couple people we're thinking of even that have made abjurations. I didn't agree with everything on their abjuration. A lot of it was good. But I'll give them credit on one point. They were humble enough to write up an abjuration and say, I wasn't Catholic. That's the biggest thing. If you could humble yourself to get to that point at least, then you'll be able to at least to see, if they're still of good will, they can see what I'm saying here is the only way all this comes together. And you've got to go back to what I'm saying here, to at least what I already showed you from the evidence of 1445 with the idols on the door in the Vatican. Please do not turn your eyes away from that. Please don't make excuses for it, like I even did. It is idolatry. Anybody who supports it and defends it or allows it's an idolater. Done. And anybody who doesn't condemn it and denounce it as idolater is an idolater. And anybody who prays with these idolaters are idolaters. It redounds. And anybody who was really good back then, we don't even know who they are, probably, or cast out into the mountains. You're not going to be made a saint by these guys, these apostate antipopes, if you blast them the way you should. I think true saints, maybe, yes, nuns and monks that were just religious. You could have some of these guys that really were saints, but they're not true saints because they can't canonize anybody. They're apostate antipopes. I'm not saying none of these people were saints, but definitely if you were a theologian, if you were any office in the church where you got to raise up in rank, you're in big trouble. So you're in big trouble. You're a priest even. Eventually, it went on to the seminaries, you're in big trouble. A simple monk, a simple nun, yeah, maybe. They could have a hope. They could have more hope, but that's another issue. So you could really have some people back then that really were saints, that were simple. Nobody who held these basic dogmas is going to be a cardinal, a so-called cardinal. Nobody. Nobody who held these basic dogmas is going to stay in theology school. They're going to raise up their hand and say, you're a heretic, and he's going to be thrown out of theology school. How fast is he going to get where he got with all that crap unless he bowed down to stay in theology school and swallowed all the heresies?
Or even if it was just Sistine Chapel, the immorality, they still have to condemn that as
immorality. Even immorality, right. Right, even immorality. If they don't condemn the immorality as immorality, they're guilty of the mortal sin of immorality. That's at least, if it's notorious desecrations of immorality, they're even heretics. We'll get into that next week. That's a deeper dogma. That's next week we're going to deal with that. So, that's it. You know, even in the beginning, you make excuses. I'll give you a lot of fun. The sisters are the ones that brought my attention. This one, when they first came in years ago, and we're talking about the naked pictures in the Vatican, I was making excuses for it even. You want to talk? Because again, what does that mean? If the naked pictures in the Vatican are really bad, then we got some rotten popes going all the way back to the 1300s and 1400s. So I said, well, I never liked it. I'm not trying to tell you I liked it. But I made excuses for it, because if that's true, then all these popes were mortal sinners. They were really bad. I thought then, too, that popes are almost impeccable to some degree, or at least, you know, not that many popes in a row. And so I said, no, it's a naked picture. That's always what I wanted to believe. So, and not only that, it's not what I wanted to believe. You want to explain to Protestants, because they would yell at the church because of that. So you think you got to make an excuse by defending it. You weren't helping the Protestants by trying to say, well, you know, there's two kinds of nakedness. Catholic nakedness and non-Catholic nakedness. Yeah. When Catholics are naked, it's not bad. But if it's, I mean, when Catholics paint a naked picture, for some reason, it's okay. The sisters will tell you, I was making excuses for that. But I didn't hold that one after maybe 2 weeks, and I was out away from that one. I said, no, it is bad. It is bad. It is wrong. You can't make an excuse for it. See, that's to people who were raised that papal idolaters at the highest degree, that they're almost impeccable. And now, or you're trying to argue with the Protestants, because then the Protestants who rightly come up and say, if you accept that and that's part of your Catholic faith, I don't want to be a Catholic. You know, these Protestants aren't even as bad off as a lot of these nominal Catholics. So I'm just letting you know how you make excuses. Get rid of your stinking excuses. Could God curse somebody for that long? Yes, He certainly did. And He certainly has. It's a horrible Amos curse and operation ever God has allowed for so long. And you should thank God He didn't destroy the earth because of it long ago. But it's bad and it's deep and it stinks. And that's why what's been going on since 1445 and even before that, year 1004, we got a lot of bad stuff. I call it one giant northern kingdom of Israel. One giant northern kingdom of Israel. Anybody who reads the Bible knows what I mean. Which means only us few Catholics here, quite a few Protestants, and very hardly any nominal Catholics know what I'm saying. Northern kingdom of Israel, started by Jeroboam, set up two golden calves. And every king after that, and every religious leader after that, worshipped the golden calves, and not one of them was faithful. There was not one faithful secular ruler, religious leader, in the northern kingdom of Israel. They were all apostates and idolaters. Every one of them. This is history repeating itself. It's not something new. Alright? So this I think will suffice. I don't got to do a video. All I'll tell you this, for this audio when it comes out there, I am going to put this stuff out on the deeper dogmas. Maybe I'll do an audio next week on the deeper dogmas. So we're going to have another audio for that, separate from this. This is most important, because these you need to believe or you can't even be Catholic. One last thing. I say, now you know why I haven't been putting sermons up, or we haven't been doing any news reports, or trying not to do too many public things. Because I knew there was things I needed to study to get a solid grip on it. I was getting books. I was doing a lot of studying this time. Because right now, as it is, I got 230 video audios I got to listen to correct and make sure I don't got anything in there. The books are easy to do because I can do a search and replace. But if I've been doing audios from 2000, whenever I stopped doing them, how much more audios do I have to... Now, most of my audios are okay, but not all of them. Now, what I'm going to do so the people know, any audios where I know there's going to be a basic dogma denied, I'm pulling them off the website and going to listen to them and then put them back up. The ones where I don't suspect anything to be, I'm going to leave them up. But I'm going to warn the people on here, if you catch any of these things, me saying any of these things, let me know so I can correct my audios. All my books, as far as I know, are going to be corrected. I've been wanting to take off all my debates for a long time and just leave a few things on, like the briefs, because they're old. They don't need it. The new books I'm going to be coming out are going to be so much clearer, more precise. And I'm going to have two books. Here's the way I'm going to do it. Faith Before the Mass. Heresy and Heretics. Ban on Holding Offices. Let's start with Faith Before the Mass. The first book is going to be very simple. All the teachings of the true church, the true Catholics and popes up to the year 1000 at least. Anything that's not... And after that, a lot of things are doubtful. Because if it wasn't true up to the year 1000, it can't be true after that. You're going to see the book's going to be a lot easier to believe. Then I am going to have a second book, though, called Faith Before the Mass Supplement, that's going to go into a lot of the stuff these modern guys did by twisting and distorting it. But I don't want that in the original book, because you don't really need it. You don't need it. I don't even know if I'm going to do that. But I might do that for the sake of some debate or something. People are confused. But my way of thinking is throw out everything from then and just keep what's back then, and it's a lot easier. But because a lot of people were swayed by it, unfortunately,
That's what I'm looking at. The second book will be for the purpose of putting in all these apostate anti-pope teachings, all these heretical theologians, and the second book. The first book is going to be the main and the most important book that's going to present the teachings as from the beginning of the church when it was real simple and easy, from all the true ecumenical councils and all that. That's the way I'm proceeding. I've been already lining things up like that. So if I would have put these... I would have more audios and lectures. Now, the reason I didn't too, because they said if I don't have everything, I might be saying something that's not correct, and I got to go back and correct all these things. So once this year gets done, this is a big year. This is I even remember some of my ex-friends in New Jersey, even though they're apostates and heretics. I'm not making no excuses for them. They're really bad. Everything they did was bad, and they're even worse than me. They knew things that they're really bad. But they said, "Oh no, Rich, your time is not yet. The time is not right." I kept saying, "What do you mean the time is not yet? When is the time? When is the time going to be?" Well, ultimately, the time right now really is, because now we're getting rid of all these, everything, 2013, getting back to the real root, that one Jew that came and told me that I got a puzzle to solve, and it goes back real far. It was a giant puzzle. And it goes all the way back, maybe even to the year 1000, we got a problem there too, but especially this Renaissance era and all that. So, here it is. That's however long it takes. That's it. But that's why now that's what I'm going to do with my audios. The ones that where I even suspect I might have a heresy on a basic dogma, not a deeper dogma. I'm not worried about deeper dogmas now, although I'm going to correct them too. Then I'm going to start going over the other ones and even getting rid of the ones where I'm denying deeper dogmas. And I'm going to have to make a mention on some of them that, well, if I mention popes that aren't popes, I might, if it's a lot, I'll say in the beginning, look, anybody who I said in here was a pope is really an apostate anti-pope. We understood this since we found out the idols on the door and all that. So I don't have to necessarily go in there and remove every time I say pope, if it relates. So there's a lot of work we got to do, but it's work I knew needed to be done anyway. For a list of the 5 basic dogmas and 10 deeper dogmas that I denied, see RGMI abjuration form titled RGMI's Abjuration of July 2013. I end this sermon with C.D. Father G. Remember C.D. Father G, and you will remember 5 basic dogmas. C is for condemn, D is for denounce, F is for favor, support, or defend, R is for religious communion, and G is for glorifying. Baptized men who do not condemn heresy as heresy when they are obliged to are formal heretics. Baptized men who do not denounce heretics as heretics when they are obliged to are formal heretics. Baptized men who favor, support, or defend heretics in their heresy are formal heretics. Baptized men who are knowingly in religious communion with heretics are formal heretics. Baptized men who glorify images against the faith are formal heretics or idolaters. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. This recording was produced by Mary's Little Remnant, 302 East Joffrey Street, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, 87901-2878, and can be accessed on my St. John the Baptist website at www.johnthebaptist.us.